What we need to do is not focus on covered lives. We need to focus on lowering costs. Because when the cost comes down and the middlemen are out of the system and the waste is out of the system and the consolidation stops and the prices are transparent and the competition kicks in, we will have a functional market. We will have full coverage. Costs will come down and this whole mess will take care of itself.
That's Marnie Jamison-Carey, Executive Director of the Association of Independent Doctors, and this is Healthcare Confidential. I'm your host, Teresa Jacob Ellis, talking with innovators and experts about health and healthcare in America. President Joe Biden recently issued an executive order that aims to protect consumers by, among other things, directing antitrust enforcement efforts toward hospital and insurance company consolidation. The executive order notes that the 10 largest healthcare systems control 25% of the healthcare market, adding that hospitals in consolidated markets charge higher prices than those in markets with healthy competition. None of this is news to Marnie Jamison-Carey, who has been advocating for price transparency and arguing against hospital consolidation as part of her role at AID. Welcome, Marnie, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Teresa. It's a pleasure.
So let's start with sort of your big picture take on this executive order. Good thing for consumers and physicians?
Absolutely. We were really encouraged and heartened. President Biden on Friday hit on three aspects of our five-point mission that AID has. So the Association of Independent Doctors, as the name implies, strives to prevent the continuing acquisition of hospitals acquiring medical groups, which we know drives up costs and drives down access and has some not always positive effects on quality, in fact. So anything that slows consolidation is a plus. And one of the things that would help slow consolidation is price transparency and competition. So those are also things that we fight for at AID. And the other part of that is we fight for site-neutral payments, which is all bollocked into this idea. If we get price transparency, we're going to be able to see that hospitals charge a lot more than independent practices for the same procedure. And right now we're price blind to that fact. So price transparency would start to help unwind that. And as we can help hospitals get more competitive with their pricing, they're going to have to lower their pricing, and that will cause them to realize that maybe it's not so lucrative to buy up practices, and this all have a positive effect. So we were excited. We were really excited. Plus, this administration has been very silent on something that the Trump administration had promoted, which was the executive order for the healthcare price transparency rule, which came out as a result of the Trump administration. So we were concerned that the Biden administration wouldn't want to build on something that the Trump administration had supported, but we have some long arms, and we actually know that this is a bipartisan issue that 90% of Americans want. And we actually got Susan Sarandon involved. And if we can get Susan Sarandon and Donald Trump to agree on the same thing, then we have a pretty good shot.
there could be a lot more work for you to do in terms of bringing very divergent viewpoints together. So hospital consolidation, you said that price transparency really will slow down consolidation. Exactly. How does that dynamic work? What do you foresee happening as a result of this executive order?
So hospital consolidation has been proven over and over again, drives prices only one way up. As often as hospitals will say, oh, we're going to streamline healthcare and we're going to make it more simple and more cost effective, it never happens. Costs always go straight up. And there are two kinds of consolidation that consumers should be aware of. One is horizontal consolidation, where hospitals buy up other hospitals, and one is vertical consolidation, where they buy up the clinics within their communities, the hospital, the imaging clinics, outpatient surgical clinics, and medical practices. And we are in the trenches with fighting that vertical consolidation, though we don't like either one. And so both types of consolidation do drive prices up and create monopolies and harm, you know, in the long term, harm communities, especially when the acquiring hospitals are nonprofit, which I like to call them tax exempt. They don't pay any taxes, and then they buy up 62% of the hospitals in our country, or 3,900 hospitals in America, are tax exempt. And when those institutions buy up practices, they take that practice's taxes off the tax rolls. So the community suffer financial harm that way. I don't think people realize how insidious it is, but there's a lot of money that comes out of the community, and the hospitals don't pay those taxes that these doctors used to pay in private practice. So there are a number of ways that the consolidation harms us.
But are those nonprofit providers, and I'm playing devil's advocate with you here, do they have a higher standard in terms of what they need to give back to the community in terms of free care or reduced price care or other things that they might be contributing?
Yeah, excellent question. And in fact, a recent study just came out, although we've long known this too, that, and yet they're supposed to provide what they do not pay in taxes, they're supposed to plow back into the community in the way of charitable care and free and community benefit. But in fact, we have found that for-profit hospitals are actually contributing more in the way of free charitable care than nonprofit hospitals. This is a study that just came out, which wasn't a shock. Because for-profit hospitals, though none of them are always angelic, they are providing free care to the community, and the nonprofit hospitals are not doing any better. So I want our hospitals to survive. We need them, but we also need them to play fairly. And if they're going to behave like for-profits and pay their executives several million dollars in salaries, that's not how a nonprofit should behave. And if they're going to behave like a for-profit, and have skyboxes and billboards and boondoggle trips to fancy places, they should pay taxes.
Okay, good point. So talk to me a little bit about the surprise bill legislation that was also mentioned in this executive order. What does that say, and how does that affect consumers and providers?
Well, like anything, Teresa, the devil is in the details. And a lot of times I've seen laws get, with good intent, get put into place, and then things get stuck in them at the last minute. So I haven't really seen how this has been codified and what the law really looks like. But on its surface, we hate price gouging. We hate surprise bills. We hate to see patients falling, you know, into entrapment of getting liens on their houses because they can't afford a medical bill because they didn't know how much it cost because nobody told them what was coming. And no patient should go into a surgery and have an anesthesiologist who's out of network who suddenly, you know, slaps them with a bill that's four times as high as the surgeon's bill. All of these things need to stop. And we need competition. We need transparency. We need fairness. And I think doctors are, I've worked with doctors all my life. And before this, as you know, I was a health reporter. And these are the smartest, hardest working people in our world. And we're destroying them by, you know, not letting them have, they can't even set their own prices. What lawyer do you know? What accountant do you know? What other professional car salesman do you know who can't tell you their prices and stick with them? Doctors are getting told what to charge by insurers and the government. And that's, they're frustrated, and I don't blame them. So we're fighting for them to be able to be competitive, to be able to say how much things cost. They want to be able to tell their patients what their procedures cost, but they don't know. They have no idea, and they're frustrated. So little by little, it seems frustrating, Teresa, but I know you know this because you've been in this world with me for the last few years, but we've come a long way. We have a long way to go, but compared to where we were 3 years ago, price transparency seems so abstract and so impossible to be able to penetrate these silos of silency. And we are moving the ball down the field, and we are getting it done, but we have ways to go.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the frustration, I think part of it is that, as you pointed out, providers don't always know what the price is because they're negotiating different prices with different payers, depending on whether it's the government or it's a private insurance company, right? There are different negotiated prices. This EO also talks a little bit about the insurance market. Have you had a chance to look at what the impact might be there?
So as I read it, the it looks like this administration is doubling down on what the Trump administration started to do with regard to price transparency. And that rule is very specific. It says that hospitals must post their discounted cash price as well as all of the payer-specific negotiated prices that have long been secretive. And they need to do it in a way that's easy to access and for consumers, and also in a machine-readable format, which is super important because there are, and I know two of them, there are high-tech innovators waiting in the wings to grab all of this data and aggregate it into an app that you, Teresa, could have on your phone and dial up hernia repair, colonoscopy, cataract surgery, and look and see what different plans pay, what your plan pays, if your plan is even competitive. 90% of Americans don't meet their deductible, so cash is king right now. So you want to know if your cash price is better than what your insurance company's price is going to be if you haven't met your deductible. So this is important information that will empower consumers. So what's wrong with the rule is what I think they're going to work on fixing is that it has no teeth. It has a very, very poor penalty. Hospitals are up against a $300 per day fine if they don't comply with the rule, which is chicken feed. That's $109,000 a year for not showing their prices. Well, that's an easy math equation. I'll make a lot more if I don't show my prices than I will if I have to pay that fine. So we're asking now that this administration works with HHS and Javier Becerra, who's our new secretary, to stiffen the penalties. We're asking for a $300 per bed per hospital per day price fine.
Very different. That's very different. Attention.
It's also fair in that it's adjustable to the hospital size. So little hospitals don't have to pay the same amount as a big, huge hospital. So it's proportionate. So I think if we can get some enforcement, you know, we've already shown them it's something 90% of Americans wants. We've shown them it's a bipartisan issue. I think we've sandwiched them on all sides. The only people who don't want this are the insurers and the hospitals, and I think they're just going to have to give it up. I don't think they're going to win. The hospitals have challenged this rule twice in court and lost, including in the D.C. appellate court. So I think we're going to get it.
So tell us what kind of activities you've been personally and as an organization involved in terms of advocating for all of this. I know it's been really on the front burner for you for quite some time.
Well, we have had the good fortune of partnering with a patient rights advocacy organization that's run by a woman named Cynthia Fisher, who's a force of nature. She's really championed this. And I reached out to her when I read about her in the Wall Street Journal a couple of years ago. And I loved what she was doing. She was on the forefront of this fight for patients. And I said, hey, we're on the forefront of this fight for physicians. And also patients too. We're for both, but you know, we're looking at this for saving our independent doctors, who once the covers are off and patients can see how much better and less expensive it is to go to an independent doctor compared to employed physician, the market's going to start to correct, and the market's going to go toward the independent doctors, and they're going to survive as providers. So that's a wonderful thing. So I'm on board with that plan, and she saw that the two of us together, we're really going to create a nice voice on Capitol Hill. I'm speaking out on behalf of the medical community. She's speaking out on behalf of patients. And she has been able to make some really fantastic strides. So we've worked together, and I'm really proud of the work she has done and honored to be on her team. And she's been blazing the trail, and I'm right along behind her and helping out. So yeah, I mean, it's a grassroots effort. We're small, as you know, but we're right. And as Cynthia and I say, every time we talk, we get up on the side of the angels every day, and we're in this together. So I think that things can happen.
Do you have any examples for us, Marnie, on some of those disparities in pricing? I know I've read about some examples about how the same procedure can be radically different in terms of cost between even different hospitals within the same corporate family, you know, the same health system, different facilities may charge?
Yes, I do. In fact, one of the outgrowths of this price transparency rule, where some hospitals are kind of coughing and sputtering and putting up some information. And we found, for instance, that Sutter Health, which is known for infamous in California for its high pricing, and one facility, you can have a C-section for $6,000 or $60,000. Depending on your plan, it's a huge difference.
Wow.
There's another example. NPR came up. In fact, they interviewed me for the story, which is why it's up top of my head. But they talked about this immigrant seamstress, 72-year-old woman who came from, I think, Korea. And she worked in a dry cleaning shop doing alterations. And she had rheumatoid arthritis in her fingers. And every year she went to this doctor and got a shot in her fingers to relieve her arthritis. And she paid $30. And then she went to the same place and it was suddenly $300, same doctor. She had just moved up a floor. She'd been acquired by the hospital. So the shot that gave her relief in her fingers went from $30, her portion went from $30 to
$300. Oh my gosh.
And that's the kind of thing that happens. I have a doctor who's a gastroenterologist up in Virginia, and he in his own facility does colonoscopies for $750. And he goes across the street to the hospital where he has privileges. They have the exact same equipment, and it's $4,000 for him doing the same procedure in a different facility. So it's crazy. The prices are all over the map. And I'm not saying everybody wants to go out and get the cheapest care. Nobody wants that. But you do want to know, if you go out to buy a car, you know you can buy a Subaru or a Cadillac. But you know what you're getting, and you can compare prices and options and quality, and you can negotiate a little bit, and you know before you get the car what you're going to pay.
Yeah, and they're all kind of within a range that isn't so
crazy,
huge.
Right?
Yeah. So are there regional or state differences, or some regions or states worse than others? I guess is my question.
A little bit of that. I'm less focused on that than I am on just the national across the board. We've got to fix this. It's pretty much bad everywhere. It's worse in highly concentrated markets. The cost of healthcare is definitely, they measure that it's worse in geographically concentrated areas where there's a lot of consolidation of healthcare. But it's the range within the hospital systems is also what worries me, when you have such a range of prices within the same hospital. It doesn't cost them any more to do the procedure. It's the same, but they get reimbursed in wildly different amounts. So that needs to shake out.
Yeah, it defies logic. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So let's take a quick break and come back and talk more about this. And I also want to talk about what's happening among independent physicians. So we'll take a little break and come right back.
Okay.
Healthcare Confidential is brought to you by Prescriptive Communications, LLC. Analyze, strategize, connect. That's our prescription for healthcare marketing. Prescriptive Communications puts healthcare businesses in front of the audiences they need to reach. If you're ready for a diagnostic on your marketing efforts, get in touch with Prescriptive today. Call us at 631-606-0525 or visit prxcommunications.com. That's 631-606-0525 or prxcommunications.com.
Welcome back to Healthcare Confidential. We're here with Marnie Jamison-Carey, Executive Director of the Association of Independent Doctors, talking about price transparency and the role of independent physicians in our healthcare system. Marnie, an email that your organization sent out recently highlighted the fact that, or a recent study that showed that the number of doctors employed by a health system or hospital or large medical group has jumped nearly 13% over the past 2 years and now has reached 70%. What does this mean for healthcare in America? What has happened?
Yeah, it was a sobering report. We love to see the number going the other direction, but COVID was really hard on doctors. There were so many unknowns. There were so many canceled procedures. Patients weren't allowed to see them. They didn't know how to bill for telehealth. It was really hard, and most doctors didn't have the resources to get through more than a few months. So they were low-hanging fruit for hospitals to come and snap them up, and private equity groups too, which did some acquiring. So we don't like to see that trend, but numbers are funny. When I first started with AID in 2014, I used a number that said in 2000, 57% of doctors were independent. And today that number is closer to 1 in 3. That was in 2014. So 1 in 3 is 30% or 33%. So that's about what this says. So that was an Accenture statistic. So I don't know. And a few months ago, I saw a report out from the American Medical Association that we just kicked over the 50% line for employed physicians.
Right. I had seen that one as well.
I don't really know what this tells us. And there's also a difference between independent or doctors themselves going to become employees and practices being acquired. Mm-hmm. So when a hospital acquires a practice, it could be one doctor or 50 doctors. So are they buying practices? Are they buying physicians? I don't know. But yeah. I do think that as we get this price transparency ball rolling, and as consumers start and employers start to be able to compare what their premium dollars are buying, and they can look at different insurance plans and they can see where the costs are, benefits are, then I think this is going to start to shake out. And I think this trend will reverse. Price transparency is probably the number one way we can reverse this trend. And to refresh those listening out there, you want an independent doctor for a few reasons. One, they're a lot more affordable. They don't add facility fees. They don't get the high, ridiculously high reimbursement rates. Two, their allegiance is to their patient. When a hospital employs a doctor, that doctor's allegiance inadvertently gets turned to please the employer. And the hospital is measuring that doctor based on how many admissions that doctor makes, how many tests that doctor orders, how many patients that doctor sees a day, how many procedures he does, and how many other employed physicians that doctor refers to. When you're an employed doctor, you have to refer to another employed doctor. And all of that turns the doctor's head to thinking about those numbers, and it takes them away from caring for the patient. If you want to have the doctor who's going to put his hand on his chin and look you in the eye and think and spend some time with you and really get down to business and care about you as a patient and not order unnecessary tests and send you off to unnecessary specialists, then you're much better off going to see an independent doctor.
Yeah, no, that's excellent point. I just wanted to kind of circle back to the statistics though, again. You know, I know a lot of, I had read that earlier, that 14,000 practices actually closed their doors during COVID or as a result of the pandemic. So I wonder if that skewed the statistics too, because if a bunch of doctors just maybe didn't get purchased, but went home, just kind of retired early, or you know, decided not that they just couldn't stay in business anymore, that might have kind of skewed that number. And to your point, yes, an independent doctor definitely has a different relationship with their patient, frankly, because it is more of a one-on-one relationship without that overreaching kind of influence of the health system, the employer, the group. What else? So you represent independent doctors. AID has a large number of independent doctors that are members of the organization. What else can independent doctors do to help them stay in private practice? What are some things that they can be doing?
So obviously we'd love you to join our cause. It's a $500 a year membership dues, and we need members. We need a louder voice. The more members we have, the bigger our footprint and our voice. That's important. It also allows you to stay up to date. We, as you probably saw today, you're a member. We sent out a couple of important emails. We're on top of the news, and we send out what we think the independent doctors should know about what's happening to their profession and the legislative updates that are having an impact. So we definitely call the news and get you and digest it down and give you a good scoop on what's happening and keep you abreast. Helps you also network with other like-minded physicians. So we have chapters, as we have one in New York, and different pockets of the country where we have a group of doctors who have come together and formed a chapter, and they have relationships with each other. They network and they refer to one another and can call each other about, you know, different issues they're having with regard to insurance plans or what have you. We also have a direct care group where I'm strongly advocating for doctors to do where they can to go direct to employers and have a direct care relationship with them. And not just direct primary care, but even specialists can have direct care relationships with employers and cut out the insurance networks altogether. It takes some bravery, but it's a wonderful way to go. And the doctors who are able to move in that direction, and 2/3 of the doctors in our association indicate that they would like to move in that direction, and 1/3 already have, whether they are fully direct care or a hybrid. So that's something to talk to us about and consider. And we have some tools to help doctors move in that direction.
That's interesting. Are you looking to start, are there regions where you'd like to start new chapters, or have you started any new chapters recently? And how is your membership doing?
Well, New York has been our most recent new chapter. It's about 6 months old. And during COVID, we were a little slow in terms of, we were really happy to maintain our membership. We didn't grow our membership, but we maintained it. So I felt really good about that. And we're starting to see that, you know, more interest is coming in. We have an exciting conversation tomorrow. I don't know if they'll join, but with two orthopedic doctors in Louisville who used to be employed by the hospital, and they left the hospital and started, built their own clinic, and they're happy as clams. And we're talking to their practice manager and looking to bring them on board as new members. And I think they'll be excited to join. So if we can get 15 doctors in any one state, then we call a chapter. So that's kind of our threshold. We think that's a nice number, and it doesn't take much, but right. We do. Yeah. Need some.
And there is life after employment, right? You can go back the other way.
Yes. Well, and again, that's tricky. Not all doctors can leave because of their employment contract. So we watched me try to encourage them before they sign the dotted line to get an attorney to look at their out clause, because if there's a non-compete, they may be stuck for a long time.
Yeah. Last question for you. What is your opinion on universal healthcare?
Well, regardless of who pays for it, healthcare costs too much. And I think that if I'm moving into the government, having the government take care of all of it, I think will really burn out doctors. I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think it's affordable for Americans. It's, you know, Medicare does work, and that's what makes you think, well, maybe why can't this work for everyone? And I think that it's people would be astounded at how much it would cost, how much it would take out of our incomes to support us. It's not working that well in Canada, where you wait in line for months to have a knee replacement. And by the time you get one, you can't even, they rule you out because you don't have enough muscle mass left. So I'd hate to see us get into that. We have, Teresa, here's the deal. Healthcare, access to healthcare is what we need. And access is not a problem in the face of affordable care. Coverage is not a problem. Coverage takes care of itself when care is affordable. What we need to do is not focus on covered lives. We need to focus on lowering costs. Because when the cost comes down and the middlemen are out of the system and the waste is out of the system and the consolidation stops and the prices are transparent and the competition kicks in, we will have a functional market. We will have full coverage. Costs will come down and this whole mess will take care of itself.
Are you optimistic? You think that'll happen?
It's going to take a while. I am
optimistic. You've got your work cut out for you, lady.
Yeah. Job security for sure.
Tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and learn more about AID.
Well, you can email me at Marnie, M-A-R-N-I, at AID-US for United States.org. And you can find our website at AID-US.org. Learn more about us, reach out, join, support. We'd love to be involved with like-minded people and getting you on board in this fight.
Great. It's a great organization. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Teresa.
And I want to remind our listeners that new Healthcare Confidential episodes are available every Monday morning, wherever you access podcasts. The show is brought to you by Prescriptive Studios and is hosted on Omni Studio. Our theme song is an original composition written and performed by the fantastic Patrick Bakarsik. Our production assistant is the equally fantastic John Roy. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us your feedback and help us continue the conversation by dropping a note on the Healthcare Confidential Facebook page. Stay well, everyone.